The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
But a lot of this centers around the FISA court and what the warrants were like when they were supposedly spying on or collecting metadata on the president and his administration during the transition. So let's find out more about this FISA court. Legal analyst Ed Pazzullo. You're going to have to help me, Ed.
Pazzuoli.
That wasn't even close. I wasn't even close to that.
That's okay.
I am so bad with names. I should just say, okay, introduce yourself. Tell us about the FISA court. Can you give us a little history and understanding of it? I've tried to lay it all out. I think I've done an okay job, but you're going to know more than I.
Look, the basics around the FISA court, it's a very powerful law. Let's understand that. The first thing, it was set up, it was amended after 9/11 to investigate terrorists and terrorism of foreign nationals and attempt to prevent attacks, more attacks on America. And so when you look at that, there's some basic things about the FISA operation. Bottom line is that whether it's the NSA or the FBI, when they go in front of a FISA judge, they go by themselves, and there's no defense lawyer. It's all done ex parte. So they go as an officer of the court. And so what that requires is that they have to provide full candor, full context, and full circumstance around what they're asking for. In other words, they have to provide full disclosure to the court, so the court can trust them. The trust between NSA or FBI coming to the FISA court and those judges needs to be something that's honored by the government lawyers that go in front of the court, because the FISA court has great power. It can surveil and investigate and collect information on foreign nationals without really due process. And it's not made to surveil or investigate American citizens, and certainly not American citizens who are political opponents.
Now, they get around some of that, I made it sound a little like conspiratorial or purpose, but they have spied on Americans, we'll put it that way. They claim indirectly, because if they're spying on somebody else that's a foreigner and that foreigner calls me, they're like, well, I listen to Doc's call too, because that's who they were talking to. That's kind of their argument, right?
Right, that's part of their argument, but there was the American citizen who is incidentally is picked up in these surveillance briefings. Here's what happens. You as an American citizen should be masked. Your identity should not be known. It should be protected. But what the Obama administration was is they liberalized the unmasking of names. You heard some of the use of masking, unmasking. That when that was liberalized, essentially many of our civil liberties as American citizens, those protections went out the window.
I think my biggest problem with the FISA court is the fact that only a few times, like less than 1% of the time that they have said no, that they have turned down getting a warrant. I mean, out of tens of thousands of times, I mean, nobody's going to get that stuff right, Ed, let alone the government that often. Come on.
Well, that's the problem. And so it's the same government that's failed us on several occasions. You let in with some of this guns. I mean, think about what's gone on with the FBI and the failure there. But in this case, the bottom line is that when the FBI goes in front of a FISA court, you're right. Almost always the courts will side with what the application request is. And the reason for it is because there's no one else there. And that's why that the obligation with the great power of this process needs to be a great responsibility. And that responsibility is on the FBI, is on the NSA, is on the government agency applying to the FISA court to make sure the court understands the specifics around what they're relying on, why they're here, what the context is, who some of the targets might be. All of that needs to be shared with the court itself. And in this case, what you have with President Trump is you have the basis, essentially the basis being, at least according to what we know, because we haven't seen the actual application yet, but the Grassley-Graham referral letter and what we know so far is that all that the government relied on was some fabricated dossier made up and paid for by the Clinton campaign or the Democrats. And so what you have is that information should never be the basis to spy at all or surveil at all against whether it's a foreign national or, frankly, an American citizen in Carter Page. And then where that crosses the line is that when you have that being used the political motivation. So if the basis is a political, you know, a Swiss cheese political document in the dossier that doesn't stand for any legal, no legal merit whatsoever, and then on top of that was paid for by political opponents of the Trump campaign, and then on top of it was used to spy on American citizens, now we're totally cross as to what the purpose and underlying power of the FISA court and how it should be used. We're totally sideways with that, and every American should be concerned about that.
I mean, there really is no balance to it. There's no oversight, is there? I mean, who would have oversight of it?
No, there's no oversight of it, and basically that's why those who apply for under a FISA warrant, ask for a request, have the obligation not only to get the warrant, but they also have the obligation to fill the court in on all of the circumstances and all of the context and be, you know, provide full candor around that application. If they don't, then you're subject to complete abuse like we have here. And, of course, the court's simply relying on what the government agents are bringing them, which is why, you know, 99.9% of the time, the court is approving the application.
Do we know who makes up the FISA court specifically?
Yeah, the district judges in the district court, the DCA district court.
Do they tell us who the judges are specifically, or they just say, or is that sealed as well?
Generally speaking, that's secret. But however, the judges themselves can open this up, and I think you can have, in fact, in this case, what I'm surprised at that we haven't heard yet is the court calling back those who made this application and asking questions, because effectively it's not just a fraud on the court, but they have to rely, the underlying basis of why this system or how this system should work is the trust that the court provides to the lawyers who peer in front of them and make the requests. Once that trust is broken, you have a real problem with the system. The system fails. And so what you have is the court should be calling back the lawyers and asking a lot of questions.
I mean, the FISA court system, really, when you look at it, is very anti-American. It's very anti the structure of America. The whole reason we have a balance of powers and separation of powers, the founding fathers, if you know anything about the Constitution, it flies in the face of all of that.
It clearly does. And there was a lot of criticism, particularly the civil libertarians didn't want the FISA, you know, didn't want FISA expanded at all. And essentially what this was the amendment was done after 9/11, and it expanded the power of the FISA court in order to surveil. And the arguments in Congress were the concerns that this would be used to spy on Americans and you know, clothed with constitutional protections that we should be, that seemed to fly in the face of our individual constitutional rights. And you hit it right on the head. It's very un-American. And you know, you can make an argument that this is this was necessary to provide security and to provide some level of surveillance opportunity for the government against foreign nationals. And when it's used correctly, then one could make an argument that says that, but it is very un-American.
Why did the FBI believe the Steele dossier? Why did they believe this?
The question is, did they believe it? Because ultimately, the dossier has been proven to be false and fabricated and, you know, highly suspect. And so they relied on the reputation of Michael Steele. And so the question becomes, why did they do that? Michael Steele's reputation, according to the the referral letter by Grassley and Graham, the reliance on the reputation of the writer Michael Steele of the dossier became the basic reason on why the dossier had any credibility at all. Now, we do know subsequently the FBI lost trust in Michael Steele because he was playing, he was anti-Trump and had a point of view that impacted this. And secondarily, this was all supposed to be kept secret when he worked, Michael Steele, when he was working with the FBI, and when he went public, the FBI lost faith in him.
I mean, ultimately, it's not whether or not there was a breakdown, it's just how big of a breakdown and who's responsible. I mean, that's really what comes down to.
This is a huge breakdown because each and every one of us should be concerned about this. When you have great power like this, it comes with great responsibility. When that responsibility is not provided in this process, trust between those bringing the application and the judges in the court, then the bottom line is the whole thing craters down. They're already on, in my view, constitutional thin ice around the power of FISA, particularly when it's focused on American citizens and particularly when it's focused on political opponents. That's something that we've never seen in the United States.
Ed, how can people follow you or find you on social media?
I'm at EDPOZZ on Twitter.
All right. I will go ahead and tweet out a link to that so people can find it and find out more about you. All right.
Okay.
All right, Ed. Thanks, buddy. I really appreciate you joining and laying us out today.
Knowledge is power. Tweet at us with the hashtag What I Learned Today. This is the Morning Blaze with Doc Thompson on the Blaze Radio Network.